Thanks for listening to the Woodward Podcast Network. Check out more shows by searching for us on Spreaker or wherever you catch your podcasts. The Woodward Podcast Network with Krupka Dental Associates.
Hello, this is Dr. John Krupka from Krupka Dental. We now have the Solea laser. You can have your fillings done without needles nor drills. We are a full-service dental office and always accepting new patients. To learn more about me and my friendly team, visit KrupkaDental.com.
Hey, this is John Gillespie with Waters and Woods TV. Welcome to another hour of Living the Outdoors with Mark Druick here on The Score.
From the Fast Sign Studios, more than fast, more than signs. It's Living the Outdoors with Mark Druick, presented by Fleet Farm. Be part of the show by calling 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. Now, here's your host, Mark Druick.
Greetings and welcome to Fleet Farm's Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick. Glad to have you along tonight. And no, we will not be talking about Aaron Rodgers. So if you have any questions or comments in regards to that, we won't be taking those calls. But anyway, we do want you to call in if you have any questions, comments during tonight's show. It's 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. You can also email me at livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Instagram. It's outdoorslivingthe. So here we are, quickly approaching. We had Scott Roon on last week, and the outdoor activities are going to start picking up again. The ice is going to start deteriorating, and all of these other outdoor activities are going to come to light, and people are going to be getting outside and doing all kinds of fun stuff. And it's I'll be welcoming in a guest tonight. And a reminder, all of our guests are sponsored by Nemeth Southside Market on Oneida Street, with the best selection of hand-cut meats and craft beers this side of the Mississippi. Anyway, tonight's guest is the outdoor skills trainer for the Wisconsin DNR. And I'm welcoming in Kayla, and please pronounce your last name for me. I forgot to ask you.
It's Sauce.
Sauce. Okay. Very good. I didn't want to mispronounce that.
I've heard every iteration there is, so no worries.
I apologize for not asking you that earlier, but welcome to the show. We're glad to have you.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I was thrilled when I reached out to you. I had seen you on TV talking about, outdoor education. And that's one of my main focuses here from the show, is to get people connected with the outdoors and help them understand that there's opportunities for people to get involved in the outdoors. And I saw you show up. I'm like, I have to reach out to her and ask her if she'd like to come in and talk about those types of things. But let's kick it off. Obviously you're an outdoor person. You love the outdoors. You do it for a living. What was it, or was there someone in your life that kind of planted that outdoor seed for you, or was kind of a mentor to get you involved?
It was absolutely my father. So I grew up, hunting from as soon as I could walk through the woods by myself. I was going along on deer drives, had my BB gun with me, and ready as soon as I turned 12 to start taking my real gun and going out on my own. So I would say absolutely my father, and just always fostering that love of the outdoors, the love of nature, and just spending as much time as we can out in it.
Sure. Was it a family affair, or was it more father-daughter time spent together? Was it other family members that were involved?
For the most part, yep, father-daughter. My mom didn't hunt. My sister didn't hunt. But I was the lucky one, and I got into it. So, yeah, for the most part, just us.
That's awesome. And, So often I get that answer that it's, a family member, but there's, a lot of other influences out there too. Neighbors, extended family, pretty much anybody. I mean, we've had answers that span the whole gamut of people getting involved in the outdoors. And talk a little bit about, are you Wisconsin native?
I am, born and raised.
Okay. What part of the state?
So I grew up in Merrill, so kind of right smack in the middle.
Lincoln County. Nice.
Southern Lincoln County.
Southern Lincoln. Okay. Good. We got that straight. What was it like growing up in that area? A beautiful part of the state.
It is.
It really is.
And I mean, Merrill's a quote unquote small town of only about 10,000. But I mean, once you get outside of town, it is just a lot of wilderness, a lot of wild. So like you said, great opportunities for hunting, fishing, hiking, foraging, everything you can think of in that part of the state.
Oh, very cool. You know, and I've been through there. You get, you know, past Wausau and up towards Langley County up in there. It's one of those parts of the state that's, like you said, it's beautiful, but there's so many opportunities, good deer population, right. Good turkey population, there's good grouse hunting, there's mm-hmm. good trout fishing. I mean, you've got a lot of things, but Wisconsin, we were talking about that before we came, you know, we came on the air of how fortunate we are to be in the state of Wisconsin and all the opportunities that you have to do here, you know, and you mentioned deer hunting. What are some of your other passions that you like? You're a turkey hunter?
I am, but I'm an adult onset turkey hunter. I didn't start until just a couple of years ago, so still feel like I'm pretty new to the game.
Well, you know, you can learn a lot in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Have you been successful?
Not yet. Okay. Hoping this year's the year.
let's wish you luck on that one. It does. You know, I think it was 3 years before I shot my first bird. Yeah. The first couple of years, you're at least it was for me, of just absorbing everything that was going on. I had friends that took me hunting, but they never really, you know, said, okay, here's a call, here's how you use it. They didn't yep. teach me how to do a lot of those things that you need to do. So I wouldn't go so far as to say I was self-taught, but in a sense I was. And I'm still learning, and I've been turkey hunting for 36 years. So
right. And we do live in an age where it is, I would say, definitely easier to be self-taught. There's so many resources mm-hmm. online that you can learn from, but in my opinion, anyways, there's just no substitute for having a real-life, in-person mentor to help you out, because you can watch 1,000 YouTube videos, but it's not the same until you're actually out there doing it.
It is. You know, you got the educational part of it, but you don't have all the sights and sounds and the smells of everything right. that's going on at that point in time. Excuse me, which is what I when I am mentoring for the Learn to Hunt program. I always want to let people know there's other things that are going around. You're going to see migrations of birds. You're going to see, you know, I classify it as the world coming back to life.
Exactly. Especially with spring turkey hunts. And that's, I helped out with a Learn to Hunt turkey last year. And, you know, there's a lot of people who have never experienced, you know, walking out in the woods in the morning before the sun has come up. And then just sitting down, being as quiet as you can, like you said, watching the world come to life. And mm-hmm. a lot of people are surprised at how loud it is. You think, you know, oh, I'm out in the middle of the woods. It's going to be, you know, really quiet. I got to be quiet. But it is loud out there, and it's just beautiful.
It is. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's, you know, a lot of people wake up and their first exposure to the morning is sitting at their kitchen table or, you know, watching the sun come up through the patio window having a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Nothing that, you know, I mean, I do the same thing. My thermos goes with me in those mornings. But when you first hear those birds, and it's still dark.
Right.
And the birds mm-hmm. start, and then it builds, and then hits this big crescendo. And it honestly, between the cranes and the geese and the robins and all of these other songbirds that are yeah. in mass
mm-hmm.
migrating through, it's almost deafening.
And it's like an audio scavenger hunt where you have to pick out, you know, oh, those are the cranes. Those are the red-winged blackbirds. Oh, there's a robin over there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it gives you an opportunity. You know, obviously you're hoping for a turkey, but you get to see and hear so much more.
Absolutely. And if you're, you know, on the ground, I've mentored people, you know, we've sat on the ground or we've been in a blind. And a blind is nice. Kind of keeps people, you know, it's when you're teaching people for the first time, it's hard to sit down and be yes. still, because yep. they can see. Very, very well. But, you know, having deer walk by your blind or fox or raccoons yes. and yep. and all that kind of stuff. But again, that's the additional learning part of it outside of the hunt itself is, you know, identifying all these different kinds of birds. And my daughter mm-hmm. was, I took her turkey hunting because for that specific reason, I wanted to expose her to see if in fact it was something she wanted to participate in
yeah.
or at least let her know what dad does.
Yeah. Where are you going so early in the morning?
Yeah. Why is he gone all the time in the spring and he doesn't come back till dark? And it was more, I brought a bird book, an Audubon bird book, and we, you know, spent a lot of time just identifying, you know, different types of birds and exposing her to that part of it. You know, she never grabbed a hold of hunting, which is fine, but at least she had the opportunity,
right,
you know, to go out and I'm sure you'll agree with me on this. I believe that it, at least giving people that opportunity, you know, to say, okay, well, now I understand. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. You know, if you've never experienced it, how can you not like it, is my theory. You know, you have to get out, experience it. And, you know, anybody who's a nature lover is going to like it, because especially if you go into it with the attitude of, it's okay if we don't get a bird. You know,
right,
we're still out in nature. We're still enjoying it. If we happen to get a turkey, that's just the cherry on top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's all of that. And I've had people that I've taken out that I'm like, okay, now I'm good. I don't need to do it anymore.
Yeah.
And
but
have
they
you
had that experience?
But now you experienced it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure. Let me ask you this: have you been in conversations with people who aren't really anti-hunters, but don't understand?
But they just don't know, right? Absolutely. So, prior to taking this position, I was actually in customer service for the DNR. So you call the general 800 number and you get somebody on the other end. That was me and my coworkers. And so in that job, I learned, you know, first off, I had a ton of training in, you know, just hunting. It gave me a super solid base in, you know, everything regulation wise, applications, everything. And you realize, like, man, the people who are really into hunting, they know what they're doing. You have to have a lot of knowledge in order to just hunt. Whereas somebody who's never been exposed to that, they think, oh, people are just going out and shooting stuff and that's all there is to it. And oh man, let me tell you, that is not the case.
That's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up, because people's perception of people who hunt or fish isn't always what they think it is. And I those are the people I enjoy taking out the most, because I've had people that are like, well, you know, I'm not into killing stuff. I go, that's not the main reason. You
right.
know, I mean, yes, you bought the license that allows you the privilege to do that. But I think it's the opportunity to understand what this outdoor world is. If, like you mentioned, Kayla,
and how you fit into it.
And how you, where's my place?
Yes.
And it's great if you get a turkey, but it's okay if you don't.
Right. It's still a good experience.
Mm-hmm. And all those rules and regulations, they I love to trout fish. I like to just fish regular fish.
Yeah.
And I like to duck hunt. I like to grouse hunt. I like to pheasant hunt. I like to deer hunt. So now you're accountable for pages and pages of
right.
information. And like you mentioned, people don't really know all of the things that go into that. And again, that's the Learn to Hunt program, is understanding, bringing in the biologists, bringing in the wardens to kind of explain this type of thing. And it must have been fun from your perspective to be in the customer service side of it. I'm sure you got some pretty weird questions.
You never knew what was going to be on the other end of that line. And I mean, you have to think, this is for the full DNR. So anything from air permitting, water permitting, remediation, redevelopment. I mean, any question anybody had about the DNR, they were calling in. You had to know either who to get them to or the answer. And it was an experience. I enjoyed it. It kept me on my toes. But yeah, it was a big learning experience.
You need to be a people person.
You do, absolutely. For at least 8 hours a day, you have to be able to be a people person.
exactly. And for me, I think customer service too. If you're good at customer service, you can do anything.
Right. And I will say it has helped me immensely in this position as an outdoor skills trainer, because I have the background and I had to know a little bit about everything.
Sure.
So now when people come to me with questions, I'm able to send them in the right direction. So absolutely carries over into any other job.
Yeah. Perfect. Did your education at Stevens Point, did that help build your base of where you wanted to get now?
I will say that my degree is in forestry recreation. So a lot of park and trail management, mostly managing people so that they don't abuse the resource.
Okay.
I was in that, but I wasn't exactly sure where I was going with it.
Okay.
And so I kind of left my options open and kind of slid into the environmental education sector. So I spent 2 years teaching at a school forest. I did some environmental ed programs down at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. And, you know, just kind of, I wanted to share my passion for nature with others, and that was a good way to do it.
It sounds like it just all kind of,
It that trail led great.
You. Yeah, I was going to say it. That's perfect. How'd you like Stevens Point?
I loved it. I loved it. Plus, it was only 45 minutes from where I grew up, so that helped too.
I was going to say it's close to home. Yep. So now, did you you graduate? What was your degree again? I'm sorry.
Forestry Recreation.
Forestry
so
Recreation.
So very heavy in the forestry. So even like the logging, timber cruising type thing, but also the recreation management side of things as well. My minor, you ready for this? Adventure education. So that tied more into the teaching people. So I was pretty lucky. I got to take classes like backpacking and camping, rock climbing, paddling, like a full semester of learning how to paddle a canoe. It was
wow,
pretty awesome.
I'd ace that. that's a job for me. That would have been a great job for me too.
Right.
But yeah, Stevens Point, great school of natural resources. A lot of people we've had on the show over the years from the DNR have been through that school.
Yes.
And it's, again, located in such an area. Did you ever make it out to Buena Vista Marsh?
I didn't, and I still want to and get in the prairie chicken blinds.
Yeah.
One of these years, it's going
to
happen.
You have to do it. You have to do it. That was, if I was to pick one highlight from my tenure at that school, that was it.
Really?
Yeah, it was. It is. A lot of people don't even know that we have prairie chickens in the state.
Right.
This is like the last booming grounds in the state of Wisconsin, and it's interesting when you all of a sudden there's nothing there, and you're in the blind, and all of a sudden you just hear this really weird noise that you
otherworldly.
It's very alien like, and all of a sudden these birds start. You know, the female shows up and the males come in and they do their dance. And,
yeah.
That was definitely ranked as probably
one of these years. I'm going to make it back out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and then you had Dewey Marsh.
Yep.
You had Mead Wildlife Area. So many.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you how many hours we spent on the Tomorrow River fishing that. But it was like the ideal place for an outdoor person to be because,
right.
like you mentioned earlier, the town is there, but you didn't have to go far in any
exactly.
direction to
and
hit the
out
woods.
There.
Yeah, and you're in this. I wouldn't say wilderness, but you're in some pretty
rural.
Substantial
yeah.
outdoors. But yeah, it's so adventure. That just
adventure, you know, education.
Adventure.
If anyone's looking for a minor at Stevens Point, I think they still offer it. It's been 8 years since I graduated, so.
Right, but what a great opportunity, though.
Right.
Because where else do you learn to do these things?
Exactly.
Unless you go to,
you seek it out yourself.
You
yeah.
seek it out yourself, or you go to seminars, or you go to places like maybe REI or some of these places that carry this equipment. But even then, are you getting enough education to actually go out and participate in that? Where I think is in a classroom setting like that, and you had more background information, I think you'd be more apt to want to do that stuff. How did it work for you?
So I'm big into paddling, love canoeing. The rock climbing, not so much. I don't have the upper arm strength for that. But, you know, I was already kind of an outdoorsy person, and that was kind of giving me an avenue of kind of through the lens of how are we going to teach others how to do it? So not only are we doing it ourselves, but how are we going to teach others how to experience this as well in a safe manner?
So you have to be a participant, but you also have to be willing to educate people as well
and keep them safe.
So when you worked with in the forestry part of it, what were some of the challenges that you came across to be able to do this job?
So you're saying getting into my position I'm in now?
Well, when you first started, you know, working into this, you know, working into the position, if you will, where you're at right now, where you started. Was it challenging, or did it just all kind of flow in?
Yes and no. So like I said, at the end of college, I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do. So I took some short-term jobs. I worked a couple summers out in Montana leading, you know, tourists on horseback rides, and then came back and still wasn't sure what I wanted to do. So did the school forest thing, environmental ed. And then I went and got married and had a kid, and that changes everything.
Yeah, it sure
and
does.
So I had to be, you know, more flexible, more fluid, figure out what am I going to do. I did a couple of years of substitute teaching in schools, and then finally I got back into, okay, what am I going to do for a longer term career? And so that's when I started in customer service with the DNR, did that for 2 years, and now I'm here, and I've been in this position for just over a year.
Awesome. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more. I want to hear about your Montana experiences. So, all right. Well, everybody, we are going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. Welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick. Thanks for tuning us in. If you have a question or comment, 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. We'd love to hear from you. You can email me at livingtheoutdoorswi.com, and I will, I promise to respond. I just got a message from Scott Roon, who is our Learn to Hunt coordinator, and he said that we've got, since last week, we've had two hunters sign up, and we have three spots left. So, LTHturkeyWisconsin@yahoo.com. So, there's still time and room to sign up for the Learn to Hunt program. So very exciting. Usually when we do this show, we get a couple of people that sign up.
Ooh,
1 year
good
we
recruitment
had
recruitment tool.
It is. It's great. And I love that. And the 1 year we had three women sign up, which I thought was awesome.
Yes.
None of which had ever hunted shot a gun, any of that stuff. So it was kind of like start from scratch. And right. Like I mentioned earlier, one of the ladies is now, she's shot an antelope, she shot a deer, a bear, turkeys, waterfowl hunted. So
that's amazing.
It is. You know, and then those people in turn, when the time is right for them, will understand when it's their time to give back.
Right.
And those are the ones that you want to do that because they've kind of gone through it and they understand what it's like.
They have a different perspective than somebody who's been doing it their whole life and don't know any other way.
Exactly. So we kind of left off. You said you spent some time in Montana. I always like to talk about out west because I love it out there. Montana, beautiful part of the world.
Beautiful. So I spent, in between my junior and senior year of college, I went out and I actually did an outfitter and guide school for a month.
Really?
Where they taught us how to pack mules, ride horses, do camp cooking, how to set up a backcountry camp, everything. It was immersive. I stayed in a wall tent in a horse pasture for a month and just gleaned everything I could from these guys out there. And then that was the first month. And then the second half of the summer, I led trail rides on kind of by the north entrance of Yellowstone National Park. So not in the park, but just outside of it, kind of looking into the park. And then after I graduated, after my senior year of college, I spent the summer out in Glacier National Park doing horseback tours. So it was amazing.
I know it's hard to do this and I've had difficulty with it, but try to describe for the listeners what that is like being in the mountain range, whether it be Wyoming, Colorado, Idaho, Montana. It's hard to describe, but I'm going to ask you to do that anyway.
It makes you feel small, which can be a good thing, I think. You know, it's seeing something that's so much bigger than yourself. And, you know, the ecosystem is totally different than Wisconsin. And just, like you said, it's hard to put into words, but if you ever get the chance to get out there, even for just a short vacation, it's so worth it and so humbling.
It is. And you mentioned Glacier National Park, which is absolutely gorgeous. Beautiful. Yellowstone is unique in its own way, but it's one of those kind of a lot of tourists attracts a lot of people there.
Yes.
But still, I've taken an interest in going back and learning more about the start and the development of setting aside Yellowstone and Teddy Roosevelt. And if it wasn't for these people who went in there and discovered these things, who knows what it could have turned into, that somebody just saw this unique ecosystem to want to preserve that for everybody to see.
Right. And I'm so thankful that, you know, they are preserved for posterity, because, you know, our wild places and wild lands are becoming fewer and farther between, mm-hmm. you know, as the human population grows, we have to expand. But, you know, preserving these wild places, having public lands that, you know, everybody technically owns it, everybody can access it, everybody can use it, is so important.
And did you find that doing those things out there was a benefit to in your position that you are now, better understanding of the big picture?
I'm not sure, because it was a lot of customer service.
Okay,
it was,
there you go.
You know, working with tourists, you know, a lot of them, it's their first time out there, their first time on a horse, which is always interesting. And so I don't know that it necessarily led me to where I was today, but man, I sure liked after hours too, and getting to hike around and experience the mountains.
Very cool. Were you a horse person before you went out there?
Not really, no.
No? So no. You learned all of that on the fly. That's cool.
For the most part, yeah.
Well, it's not like they're these, you know,
2,000-pound animals that have their own brains.
Yeah, and they can be a little temperamental. So now that brings you to where you are now. We've kind of had the backstory to what got you to this point.
Yeah.
And it's all these little steps and these building blocks that have kind of put you, to me, it sounds like it's the ultimate position for somebody like yourself.
I really like it, because I get to help so many people. So my position, the outdoor skills trainer position, my main focus, I would say probably about 75% of my job, is working with the volunteer safety instructors. So the people who are running the hunter safety courses, ATV, boat, snowmobile safety courses. I train them, certify them, get them all the equipment that they need so that they can be boots on the ground working with students, getting everybody on the same page as far as safety and certification goes.
Wow, that's a big job.
Little bit. So I cover the Northeast region, and that's all, it's 18 total counties. So from like Green Lake, Marquette County, all the way north to Forest, Florence County, and then everything east over to Lake Michigan. So
wow.
I work with about 1,300 volunteer instructors.
Wow, that's impressive. Is there still an abundance of people that want to help and volunteer their time? Or are you still struggling to get those people in place?
We always, always need more. So, you know, it's nice being an instructor, because you do get to set your own schedule, run classes whenever you have availability. But we're having trouble recruiting new instructors. You know, there are guys who have been teaching hunter safety for 50 years since the program started. 50 years. Thousands of students have been certified by these instructors, and it's amazing. But we know they're not going to be around forever. So we're trying to bring up kind of these younger folks to, you know, work with them while we still got these older instructors, and then eventually one day take over so that we can, you know, have the continuity throughout the program, making sure that we can always offer these safety programs.
Well, and you think that a lot of these people that are coming up, I mean, thank God for all of these guys who have been around for so long. But do you think it's more relatable when you get the newer folks in there to kind of make it, give it a little freshness? I don't mean that in any way, shape, or form in a derogatory way, but can that be helpful?
It absolutely can. You know, for the most part, the students of the classes are kids. So average age, I would say, is 11, 12-ish. And so, you know, when they see these older folks, they associate with grandparents, like, oh, it's like my grandpa teaching. So to have, you know, younger people doing it can help. We do have actually a junior instructor program where anybody who's under 18 and has already completed the safety course can actually be a junior instructor and help out with the actual certified instructors. And that peer-to-peer education is great, because, you know, the instructor can be up there talking, and, you know, I've been in many teaching positions, and I've seen it myself where the eyes glaze over and you're there, but you're not really there. But then, you know, the junior instructor steps up and says, so it's like this, guys. And then everyone's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And so having that peer-to-peer contact is great.
Oh, that's awesome. And what does it, you know, take to be certified? Is there X amount of book time and then on-hand training? How does that work, Kayla?
So we try to make it as easy as possible. So we have two ways to get certified. You can get certified by apprenticeship. So if you know of an existing instructor group that's running courses, you can, you know, reach out to them. You do have to apply to be an instructor because all of our instructors get background checked. We want to make sure, you know, if you're working with students, if you're working with the public, that you got a good background. So we do background check everybody. But once you clear that, you can help out with two courses. So say somebody wants to get into hunter safety. They help run two hunter safety courses. And it's not just sitting in the back and watching. You can actively be participating in instructing. And once you help out with two, that completes your apprenticeship and you can become certified. The other way is to attend a DNR training. So I do put on, we call them mini academies. It's usually like a 5-6 hour training where I'm going through everything with you, from the background work of, you know, how to create a class on the computer, you know, how many hours, things like that, and then going through all of the lesson plans that you need to teach while you're running a course. And it's a lot of information, but, you know, if you attend the training day, the academy day, then you're certified. You don't have to do the apprenticeship process. Okay. So you can do an apprenticeship or a training.
Very interesting. Now, do you have individuals that can teach multiple?
Absolutely. Okay. Yep. A lot of our instructors teach multiples. Or if you get an instructor group, you know, you might have this guy heads up hunter safety, this guy heads up ATV safety, this guy does snowmobile, but they still kind of work together too.
Is there information on the DNR website to kind of funnel people to learn more about these programs and how they can sign up to take these classes?
So the best place to look would be to go to the DNR website and in the search bar type in volunteer safety instructor. And that will take you to a page. It'll have a link to contact information for all of the outdoor skills trainers. So there are 5 of me around the state. So like I said, I cover just the Northeast region. There's 4 other outdoor skills trainers that are covering the other parts of the state as well. So find whoever covers your county, you know, best place to start is going to be to reach out to us outdoor skills trainers, because we'll get you the forms and everything you need and we can answer any questions. But if you want to just peruse the website as well, kind of check out and see what we're all about, that would be a good place to start.
Yeah, there's so much information that the DNR has done a wonderful job of with their Go Wild pages. And there's so much information out there that people just need to take a few minutes, you know, rainy day or whatever. Pull up the website, go through it. There's so much information on there, you know, like explaining yourself and all of your other, you know, people that you work with in the same capacity about, you know, all of these things and, you know, everything has a couple paragraphs, you know, whether it's bear hunting or deer hunting, pretty explanatory.
Yeah. I feel like the DNR website is one of the easiest to kind of navigate. I've been on quite a few other states' fish and game agency websites, and they're old and clunky. And, you know, when Go Wild came out, it was, you know, pretty novel, pretty new, but it has been a game changer, I think. And I mean, it's won international awards for ease of use. So we try to make it as easy as possible on you. But if you're struggling with it, absolutely don't hesitate to, you know, call the customer service line. You can do a live chat with the customer service line.
Oh, wonderful.
Or if you have a specific contact in a program that you're looking at, usually you can find their contact information right on the DNR website on the page you're looking at. So don't ever hesitate to reach out to a real person at the DNR. That's what we're here for.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm going to back you up on that. I've been on so many websites for fishing game and DNR from other states. You get to the point where you're like, it's frustrating.
Yes.
And then reading through, you know, filling out the forms to get this zone, you can only do this here and that there. Wisconsin is so straightforward, so easy. And that, you know, and everybody, that's how we work. Everything's online. Everybody's doing stuff on their phone all the time, and it has to be easy to be able to do that. Because it can be frustrating to no end. And then I did it last year, or this year, beginning of this year, went out east and bought my waterfowl hunting license. Well, they didn't tell you that there's one that's good up until this date, and then you have to buy the other one. I'm like, okay, I need the, 2022 license. Well, actually needed the 23 license because it expired before I got there. So I ended up buying the one I shouldn't have. Called them up. They were very gracious about it. It's like, oh, no problem. We'll cancel that one. Go back in and do this one. It just, the way it was lined up did not separate it enough to give you that choice. I mean, it was frustrating. It's like, oh, I can't believe I printed this off and this expires before I get there.
Oh, no.
Okay, yeah, did something wrong. All right, well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take another break. When we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. Back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick, and Alex has again reminded me, which I have neglected,
to tell you. Electronics talk and text line. Use them.
Talk and text line.
Yes,
We're hitting the big time here, Alex.
Yes, we are.
We're moving up the technological ladder.
We're moving.
All right, 920-281-1570, or you can call us at 866-653-1570. Again, it's the talk or text line, 920-281-1570. You can also email me. I do have my computer sitting here, so if you have a question for me.
Speaking of talk and text line, we actually have someone on the Cease Electronics phone lines right now if you'd like to take a call or
quick. I think we would love to take a call.
Who do we have up with us here on Living the Outdoors?
Hello, sir. It's Dr. K.
Dr. K, how are you?
I'm very good. I have a question.
Sure.
Initially, I thought my question wasn't very good, but as I asked more people, I'm finding more and more people don't know the answer to this.
Sure.
My son is going to school to be a police officer, and we have a place up in O'Connell County. We've taken a couple classes, but I thought this summer we would go up and do some target shooting and stuff like that on our property into a lower-lying area. And I'm wondering exactly how far we have to be from, say, a garage or anything like that, or a shed.
Well, you know, that's really a question that would probably have to be geared more towards our wardens. They would have a better idea of that. They're coming up next week on the show. But I think, discharging a firearm, I know you have to be a significant difference away from any physical building, whether it be a garage or anything like that. Obviously, making sure everything is safe beyond that. But you know what? I think what you should do, my friend, is give us a call next Wednesday when I've got the wardens in here, and then they can explain that. There might be some local municipalities that have some ordinances in regards to that as well. I would check with them first. And say, hey, you tell them exactly what you told me. And then, say, is this safe to discharge a firearm in this area? Is there buildings or anything in the area that you're going to be shooting from?
Well, I mean, we have, a property with buildings on it, cottage and a shed and a garage, but then the adjacent property, which is also ours, is more of an area where you would shoot down into, and there's nothing behind that.
Sure.
Just for target shooting, not hunting or anything like that. But yep. Just,
oh, yeah, there's a lot of folks.
I call it splitting wood.
There you go. Good analogy. I know there's a lot of people that do that on their properties where they'll, sight in their rifles or, take the kids out and let them shoot 22s, whatever it might be. I would just check with
I want to make sure we're doing that the right way.
It sounds like you're right on track. I would definitely call the local municipality and say, hey, here's what we're doing. Is that legal? And then we can talk to the wardens next week, too, and bring – that's actually a really, really good question. And I know that there's some regulations in there as well in regards to that. But if you call us back next week, Mary Bish will be here with us, and we can give you a better answer. How's that?
I will do that. Thank you.
Oh, very much. Appreciate you listening to the show.
Thanks, Dr.
Thank
K.
you.
Take care now.
See ya.
All right. Great question. I love the fact that people are conscientious about that when it comes to discharging firearms and making sure that everything is being done correctly, which obviously in your hunter safety is a pretty big deal.
It's one of the four rules of firearm safety. Be certain of your target, what's beyond it. So make sure you're shooting in a safe direction.
Always, always, always. So, you know, in when you're talking about outdoor education, you have to be certified to for boat, ATV. What are some of the other things that you should have some certification?
Yeah, and there's date cutoffs on each of when you have to be certified. So, for example, for hunter safety, if you were born before 1973, you don't have to have a safety certificate. You don't have to go through a hunter ed class. Not to say it's not a bad idea to take one anyways.
Sure.
But as far as recreational vehicles go as well, so ATV, boat, and snowmobile, you do need safety certificates for those as well. And I don't have it right in front of me what the cutoff dates are, but for the most part, they're in the mid to upper 80s. So if you were born before the mid to upper 80s, you don't necessarily need a safety certificate, but again, not a bad idea to still take a safety course.
Absolutely. In particular, if you have children that are up and coming.
Take it with them.
I took my daughter. We went together. Jason Higgins was our instructor at the Boys and Girls Brigade in Nina. And, you know, we took it together. I did more or less. I wanted her to understand, you know, when you have firearms in the house, there's a certain certain safety aspect that's involved there and learning how to deal with all of that. And
absolutely.
Plus, and we got to do it together.
Our, you know, our hunter's safety, there's hunting right in the name there. But you're not going to come out of the class being a master hunter by any means. It's more of a firearm safety, you know, general hunting safety, not necessarily how to hunt. So we're going to teach you how to be safe in the woods, you know, how to be safe with firearms, how to be safe in tree stands, how to safely cross a fence, those kinds of things. Not necessarily, oh, here's what a turkey track looks like. Here's how to scout and follow it. It's more of the safety aspect.
Perfect segue to the next question. That's why there's the Learn to Hunt programs.
Exactly.
So that builds off of that. So you take that, get your hunter safety certificate, you know, and that background information is incredibly important. I think it is the biggest foundation if you want to hunt, but it also understanding safety in the outdoors in general. Because we talk about it all the time. Every time you step out into the woods, whether you're walking down a trail or sitting in a ground blind or sitting in a duck blind or a tree stand, there's always safety issues.
Right. And you always hope nothing goes wrong, but you have to be prepared for it.
Absolutely.
As well. So, you know, having those safety scenarios always at the forefront of your mind can help you out if you do get into trouble.
Absolutely. And in being prepared not only for yourself, but somebody in your party. And how to go through, thank goodness now we have phones. I mean, back in the day, it was, I remember not having cell phones and, you know, leaving a message for somebody, here's where I'm going to be, here's where I'm expected to be home. Now they can pretty much ping your phone and find out where you are if need be.
Yeah.
But now you've got that available to you. But there's other things, too, that are so important that you don't really think of until it happens to you. But like you said, be prepared.
Yes.
So now we've got these Learn to Hunt programs, and we've talked about the Learn to Hunt Turkey program. And, you know, I love being a part of that. And there's other programs out there as well, not just turkey hunting.
There are. Yep. So we have a Learn to Deer Hunt. We have a Learn to Small Game Hunt that focuses on, you know, rabbits, squirrels, a lot of Learn to Pheasant hunts going on. Another thing we've kind of been trying this last year are more of, you know, not necessarily the multi-day hunts, but kind of one-day workshops. So a big one we tried out this last year, it was a Learn to Butcher class. So,
oh, nice.
You know, there's a lot of people I feel like out there who feel confident enough to go out, actually harvest a deer, but then what? You know, I might have no problem taking it down, but then how do I field dress it? How do I skin it, quarter it, everything like that? So I ran one up in Green Bay at the service center. We had 17 adults there, and we put a deer up on a hitch hoist and let them get their hands on it. Everything from, you know, skinning it and everyone, all right, everyone pull on the hide. See how actually easily it comes off. You don't have to yank as hard as you think you do.
Sure.
You know, talking about CWD testing with it, and then, you know, getting the quarters out on the table and showing them, here's how you're going to slice off, you know, the eye of the round. And we didn't get too in depth on it, but, you know, just, you know, telling them the main thing is, as long as you get the meat off the bone, it doesn't have to look pretty. As long as you get it off the bone, that's all that really matters. And, you know, trying to build that confidence of, you know, okay, I feel like I really could go out, harvest a deer, and then know what to do with it on the back end as well.
You know, and a lot of people are starting to take notice of that because it's quite expensive.
Yes.
And you can go out and buy yourself all of the tools to grind your own, stuff your own sausage, a good set of knives, maybe a butchering table, a hitch hoist, which is perfect.
It's, you know, it makes it easier. Yeah. And you don't even have to get that fancy. You don't even have to have all of that stuff. If you like venison steaks, it's even easier. You don't even have to buy a grinder or sausage stuffer. As long as you get the meat off the bone, you're eating well.
And then you can cut it the way you want it.
Exactly.
And package it the way you want it.
And you know it's your meat is another big thing.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. It's like you take in, especially during the peak of the season, it's like, how do you know you're getting yours back or whatever? But I've been a big proponent of that for years. I love to make my own stuff and do it. I've taken it, I wouldn't say I'd call myself an extremist, but I like to dabble in that because I like to cook and I like to, I love wild game. So why not figure out some really cool things to do with it? But that's a great program. They also have like Learn to Fish and other programs like that too?
We do, yep. So we have Learn to Hunt, Learn to Fish, Learn to Trap programs as well. So the Learn to Hunt ones, I would say, are the most kind of in-depth, hands-on. It's multi-day. You're really getting out there. There's usually a classroom day where you're going to learn about habitat and biology, scouting, those more in-depth things. And then there's usually a range day where you go out and you fire the weapon that you're going to be using on your hunt. And then it culminates in the actual hunt with one-on-one with a mentor.
Now, do you coordinate? Are you involved with all these programs as well, or to what extent?
Not so much. So I mentioned before that about 75% of my job is working with the volunteer safety instructors. The other 25% is working with these, we call them R3 programs. So R3 stands for recruitment, retention, reactivation. So recruitment, how do we get more hunters? How do we make new hunters? Retention, okay, maybe they've tried it a little bit. How do we keep them hunting? How do we keep them in the game? And then if they do fall off the wagon and kind of lapse for a couple of years, how do we reactivate them, get them back into hunting? So that's where these Learn To programs are kind of helping out with that.
Plus, you know, if you've been out of the game for a while, there's some significant license savings as well. I think if you have you know, $5, if you've been out of it for X amount of time, I mean, what a great way to get somebody back in is offer them a discounted rate.
Low cost buy-in. So if you've never hunted or fished before, we have a lot of first time buyer licenses. You can get, you know, a gun deer license for $5. If you've never bought it before, or if you haven't purchased it in the last 10 years, you qualify for that first time buyer license. And we also have another type of license that not a lot of folks know about. It's called a recruiter license. So if you convince 3 people in a year to purchase a first-time buyer license, and those first-time buyers give your DNR customer ID number to customer service, you qualify for a half-price-ish license. So if you recruit 3 new hunters or fishers or trappers in a year, you qualify for your license for the next season for about half price. So like that conservation patron license, that's normally $165. You could get it for $105.
There's your incentive right there.
Yep.
Perfect. All right. Well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take another break. When we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. Welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. Thanks for taking the time to join us here tonight, Kayla. It was a pleasure to have you in the studio, and I'm hoping, you know, you kind of put the word out there a little bit more. There's number one, there are opportunities for people to donate their time, volunteers, and there's great opportunities for you to get involved in the outdoors.
Exactly. Yep.
And it's there's not a lack of that here in Wisconsin. It's just making sure get people get put to the right place. The Learn to Hunt programs, the Everything that's out there for people to get involved in the outdoors in Wisconsin is pretty huge. But great to have you here in the studio, and we'll have to get you back on again sometime.
That sounds good.
All right, perfect. All right, again, all guests are brought to you by Nemus Southside Market on Oneida Street in Appleton. Best selection of hand-cut meats and craft beers in the city. Again, thanks for taking the time to tune us in tonight. Glad to have you along for the ride. And remember, if you have the ability to impact somebody's life through the outdoors, take advantage of it. I guarantee you it will make you a better person. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Have a great evening and live life in the outdoors.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.